Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. We are recording this a couple of days before the NBA trade deadline, so David and I are going to get together and just kind of huddle up and I guess do a little bit of briefing before the trade deadline ends here on Thursday. We've had some action already. DeMarcus Cousins got moved. Serge Ibaka got moved before that. The Heat were linked to Ibaka. Obviously didn't get him. He's in Toronto. We talked about the DeMarcus Cousins deal on the mailbag on Monday. So if you didn't catch that, you can go back and listen to that. But still some action going on. As we're recording this, Lou Williams just got traded to the Rockets. So this is a really busy trade deadline. Are you surprised by how busy it is, David?
I thought there was a lot of smoke early on, and we kept seeing. I think the new CBA might have changed the way a lot of teams move forward. I don't know if I'm necessarily surprised. I think this kind of fits in line with what I thought would happen. You know, a couple of small pieces here and there. And look, there's still 2 days away. And you forgot to talk about arguably the biggest trade in the Southeastern Division, which was the acquisition of Miles Plumlee. Miles Plumlee by the Charlotte Hornets. He moves the needle there quite a bit. So they got rid of Roy Hibbert, good old friend Roy Hibbert, and Spencer Hawes. So a lot going on. I'm not sure yet. I get the feeling now as we're moving closer to the deadline that Miami's probably going to make a move, which means that they probably won't.
Well, it was on the Low Post, Zach Lowe's podcast. He had Mark Stein on. And kind of towards the end, this has happened a couple times on the Low Post where he just kind of throws in some Miami Heat stuff at the very end.
They're an intriguing team for him.
He asked Stein about, do you have any news on the Miami front? And Mark Stein basically said, I've been waiting for Goran Dragic's name to pop up in trade rumors, and I haven't. Like, it just hasn't been on the radar. And then he kind of hedges by saying, but when Miami does make a move, they act quickly and they act decisively. So you'll probably like hear the name and then it's gone. Like, it's just like, otherwise it doesn't really get leaked, which is true. Like, if we think about when the Heat traded for Dragic, it was very much like that. All of a sudden we were shipping off Danny Granger and a bunch of two future first rounders and a bunch of other players. Sean Williams, right? A bunch of other things.
Gosh, the Sean Williams era.
Sean Williams. Good times. And then all of a sudden, like, oh crap, we got Goran Dragic. So that's not untrue. But really, we haven't heard a lot about Miami because they could really go one of two ways. They're not like quite in purgatory. You know what I mean? They're not like sixth, seventh seed, first round exit type situation. Right. But they're like just below that. They're like 3, 4, 5 games out of the eighth seed for the playoffs, 3, 4, 5 games out of like a top six draft pick, which is now a weird place to be in.
Yeah, I find myself thinking, are they going to go and swing for the home run, or are they going to make a minor move? And it seems weird, right? Because Miami isn't typically the kind of minor move type of team, particularly given what their record is this season and, you know, the win streak notwithstanding and everything else. And I guess if they were going to make a smaller move, it'd arguably be one at a power forward upgrade, right? I thought we saw some inkling from the team that they might be interested in, say, a guy that you've had interest in the past, which is Marvin Williams, possibly acquiring him from the Hornets after he just signed a deal this past offseason, maybe upgrading the power forward position. I guess he would come in and slate as the starter, filling in for Luke Babbitt. I'm still not sure what they'd have to give up in order to acquire a guy like Marvin Williams, but that seems like one of those smaller deals, right? That wouldn't necessarily be a home run swing, but one to upgrade the team this year and still potentially make a push for the playoffs.
Yeah, and it really depends on, like, that would be an upgrade at power forward, it would take like Josh McRoberts and James Johnson for Marvin Williams, but that would be a downgrade from James Johnson, right? Johnson's having a better year than Marvin Williams. Marvin Williams is not having a great year, but he's not having a bad year. James Johnson is having a fantastic year, but if there's any concern by the Miami Heat that this is a contract year thing for James Johnson and they're not going to want to sign him to a long-term deal that's going to be worth more than what Marvin Williams is making, which is around 12 or 13 million a year.
Right.
Then maybe you make that trade, and that way you also get out of the McRoberts deal, and we know that McRoberts had his best years of his career in Charlotte, so maybe Charlotte wants to kind of bring that magic back, so to speak. But
sure, makes sense.
So if you do like McRoberts and Johnson for Marvin Williams, maybe that works, but it really depends on what the Heat think of Marvin Williams, because he's locked into for three more years after this season. So that doesn't really jive with the flexibility that Riley likes to have. And that's going to be the kind of move that Miami makes. If they do make something for a playoff push, it's also going to provide flexibility, and it's not going to give up any long-term assets. So probably not trading Josh Richardson or Tyler Johnson or even like Rodney Magruder or Willie Reed or anything like that, guys who are essentially under contract for next year, even though Willie Reed can and probably will, most certainly will, opt out after this year. Probably not giving away those guys for somebody that just kind of moves the needle a little bit to make a playoff push. I don't see that happening. I could see Miami, if you're Pat Riley, maybe you're trying to jump in as a third team and unload McRoberts, like a third team in another two teams trade, and say like, okay, we'll give you McRoberts a salary filler in some way or something, and trade like a 2024 second round pick to attach with him or something like that. But other than that, I'm not sure which way the Heat can go. Like Tyler Johnson, his name comes up among Heat fans, but he's got to, you know, sign off on any trade for the rest of the season. So he probably doesn't get moved just because that's so complicated and difficult. Deion Waiters, like maybe if there's a team, look, we just saw the Rockets trade for Lou Williams as we started recording this. There was a lot of teams that were calling about Lou Williams. Do one of those teams now, with Lou Williams off the board, say, well, we still need some scoring punch? Do the Wizards call the Heat and say, we'll give you a couple of second-round picks for Deion Waiters or whatever it might be? Maybe the Heat start fielding offers like that, right?
Yeah, that seems like a possibility. I would hate to part with Deion Waiters, to be honest with you. Here we are. who knew we'd be at this point years later where we were wondering whether or not Deion Waiters would be the piece that would be hardest to give up in an upcoming trade scenario?
It's funny because we were talking about how much we like Deion Waiters and how we should re-sign him for about $10 million a year. That's what Barry Jackson, Miami Herald, he's kind of reporting that Waiters will probably get signed for like, heard $8 million. And then Jackson says he'll think it's going to be closer to 10, which is exactly what you and I have been saying since Waiters really started coming back along. We think he'll get re-signed for $10-ish million. James Johnson, maybe $10 or $12 million, something in that range. Willie Reed, maybe $8 to $10 million a year. So if the Heat don't want to pay those guys, then maybe it's best to trade them. I mean, there are teams that would want James Johnson, this version of James Johnson, for a playoff push. Like, does Utah come in and say, we need some backup, more versatile bigs off the bench. We'll give you a late first-round pick for James Johnson. Like, are there teams making those phone calls? And if you're Pat Riley, if you're the Heat, if you're Rilesburg, which is what I call Pat Riley and Andy Ellsberg now, do you... Like, that's a tough decision, because if you trade away a guy like Waiters or James Johnson to a real contender, you're basically submarining any hopes at the playoffs, because those guys are such important pieces for this Heat team right now. But if you can get real assets back for those guys to help build a long-term roster, it's a hard question. It's a hard question to answer.
I think there would have to be full disclosure on everybody's part there. And you know, often these moves are done, I don't know if they're done necessarily secretively, but I think that's a pretty rational statement there. I think, you know, the player might be involved, but given the way this team has come together and everything that's gone on, yes, there's always going to be a business side to every transaction, but I wonder if there'd have to be like full disclosure between the team, the front office, and of course the individual player and his agent. You know,
why would that matter, though? I'm wondering.
Because I think if you move a player like Waiters or James Johnson, you'd probably still want to sign whichever player doesn't get traded away. And I think you kind of hurt that chance a little bit if you're willing to say, look, come in here, do the work, we're going to get 4 or 5 good months out of you, and then we're going to trade your ass out of here for a first-round pick, because obviously we don't really intend to re-sign you or hope to bring you back next year. You want to at least work in good faith, I think, that they've done the work. Look, I mean, James Johnson spent the All-Star break not at the Bahamas, not, you know, anywhere else, not with family or friends. He spent it at the gym in Miami working on his game and doing what he's going to do. I mean, that speaks volumes. Yeah. I think if a team, if the front office and a guy like Riles in particular, who puts so much weight in the work, sees that kind of effort and commitment and then says, whoops, we're going to get a 19th, 20th, 24th pick in the draft for all your effort. Thanks so much. But we'd like to move you for the 24th best guy in next year's college draft. You know, who's that? Who's the 24th best guy? A player, a guy who spent, you know, he's 19, 20 years old, you know, still has a lot of years and time to develop, or a guy like James Johnson, who's already here and has already developed and has already done the work on behalf of this organization. Yeah. Sure, there's a selfish element involved there in that, you know, he wants to make the most of his career. He wants it to you know, translate into something lucrative next season.
And that's the thing, right? That's the question for the Heat, because if you look at these guys who have outperformed their contract, James Johnson, Deion Waiters, Willie Reed, what are the chances that the Heat re-sign all three of them?
You know, I think it's like possible.
Right? Is it like 50-50, 60-40? It's not a guarantee, right?
So I'd say 40-60. I'd say 40-60 in favor of them not re-signing all three of them.
So then if you're Miami and you've gotten these guys to a point where they're going to make so much more money than what they signed for this past summer, they're going to make a lot more money than that this summer, and you're risking losing all three of them, or one of them, or just two of them, or whatever, do you have an obligation to the franchise? If you're Pat Riley, you're the quote-unquote ruthless Pat Riley, do you have an obligation then to trade one of them, maybe the weakest link, or whichever one you think you have the, you know, the least odds of re-signing this summer, to trade one of them for whatever, it's 2 second-round picks, a late first-round pick, whatever it might be? That's, you know, I'm not saying yes or no. I'm just saying, like, that's a hard question. And I wonder if Riley's even getting these phone calls. That's what I would imagine he's on the phone with somebody about something. But, I mean,
I think
the trade deadline.
I think the two, if I had to rank the players on the roster currently as far as trade value now,
yeah,
it would be probably Goran Dragic.
Yeah.
And then James Johnson. I don't think Whiteside is wanted a commodity. I know that we keep saying, like, in our minds, we think elite level rim protection, you know, a guy who can finish around the basket, great rebounding, etc. But I don't know that he's necessarily at that contract. Like, last year, the problem was that he was almost too valuable as far as his production was concerned, and his contract was under $1 million a year. So he was such a great value that they couldn't move him because you wouldn't get anything in return. This year, I think his contract is so expensive that I don't know that you can possibly get back equal value. So I don't know that you'd want to move him. So if you're
I want to stay there for a second though, because we've talked about Whiteside in trades before multiple times.
Sure.
And like, didn't we have our whole like little mock trade deadline thing, and like Whiteside was involved in every trade?
All right.
And a big part of that was because we thought Whiteside, there's value for rim protector, rebounder, and guy who can finish at the rim. But then you look at what DeMarcus Cousins got traded for, and we didn't really talk about this on Monday in our mailbag, but for Buddy Hield and a box of jelly beans, or a jar of jelly beans, as one of our mailbag people put it, what do the Heat get for Whiteside if all the Kings got was Buddy Hield and a first-round pick? Like, I don't know what the market for Whiteside is, especially when a guy like Jahlil Okafor, who is at a small fraction of the cost of Whiteside and is much younger than Whiteside, he's out there by Philadelphia. Maybe Nerlens Noel is still available. You have guys like, you know, the Miles Plumlee, who you mentioned, Nurkic, these other guys that are being moved and traded to a lot of teams that might not need centers anymore. They might say, like, if you're Portland, you're like, okay, we got Nurkic, and maybe Azeli comes back at some point if we make the playoffs, and we'll see what we got there, but we're not going to make a move for Whiteside. I don't know. Like, I don't think that Whiteside does have great value, so I agree with you there. And that Boogie thing, that hurts. And you look at what the Nets, what they were apparently
hoping
shopping.
Hoping to get two first rounders for Brook Lopez, and now chances are they won't get anywhere near that.
It's already reported that it's going to be, they've lowered their asking price to a first rounder and a second rounder. So And the 76ers haven't been able to move Jahlil Okafor, right? Like, other teams are just pulling out. And Okafor, like, costs nothing, basically. So, I don't know what team is going to trade for Whiteside.
Yeah, I don't think any of them.
So, I agree with you completely. So, it's like Goran Dragic, James Johnson, because of the nature of his deal and it expires. That's a good deal.
And his versatility. And his impact.
Versatility. I mean, he's a good player. I mean,
why wouldn't you want that guy? Look, Toronto just swung a deal for Serge Ibaka. Arguably, they would probably want a guy like James Johnson. I mean, Patrick Patterson is that guy, but he's been hurt for them. I mean, they'd probably want a guy like Johnson to come in there. You know, he's familiar with the system. He'd probably give a great boost. You'd want him to be able to lock down a guy like LeBron if you're going to meet up with him in the later rounds in the Eastern Conference. I mean, that's a great deal for them. I don't know if they'd be willing to move a guy like, say, Norm Powell or I don't know what they'd have at this point.
A young player like that that's on a rookie scale contract or a late first round pick is probably what it would take to get James Johnson or even get that conversation started, I should say. But, you know, those are like the fringe moves that Miami can make. If you're
here's another one, though. I heard that they were also interested in New Orleans' Terrence Jones. Did you hear this as well?
That Miami was?
Yeah, that Miami was kicking the tires on them, yeah.
But he's making $1 million, and that's a tough salary to trade for. I don't know what.
Babbitt, right? I mean,
You can't move Babbitt back to New Orleans.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, I forgot he came from
there. So that he's not allowed. He can get traded to any other team but New Orleans. So Babbitt just
second rounder, maybe
staying useless. Babbitt. Like you'd have to trade like Willie Reed, but that's not worth it. Josh Richardson, no way. Ronnie Magruder, they're not trading Magruder for Terrence Jones.
No.
So yeah, it's just not going to happen. I think at this point you just let power forward be power forward. I don't think that he could trade for a power forward to replace or upgrade Babbitt. But maybe somebody gets bought out after all this. Like, we talked about Matt Barnes, right? Like, he's a veteran that ends up getting bought out. We already went at length about why Matt Barnes is not a good fit. But another veteran that gets bought out after all these trades get done, maybe something like that happens. I don't know. Like, Corey Brewer just went to the Lakers. I don't know what their plan is with Corey Brewer. But does he get bought out? Is he an option? Like, just stuff like that might be the way that Miami goes as far as upgrading the power forward spot. And that seems to be Pat Riley's way, where it's not like something that they need now. They're not going to trade away a future asset or anything, but hey, we can get somebody on the buyout market. We've got this extra roster spot for as long as Josh Richardson is out. Let's get this guy a 10-day contract or sign him for the rest of the season and roll Richardson out for the year or something like that and upgrade that power forward spot for a playoff run. I don't know. Maybe that seems like more of a Riley-type move, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I hear Chris Bosh is going to be available.
Well, that's the other thing, right? Like, after March 1st, I think, that they're expected to waive him and get that money back. And this kind of goes hand-in-hand with what the Heat's long-term plans are, because we're talking a lot about what they want to do right now. Maybe these fringe moves to maybe make a playoff push or part with or get some money back on these guys on expiring deals. But, I mean, the big picture, let's face it, that's what matters to Pat Riley. And being a contender, being a championship contender, an Eastern Conference contender. And I've been thinking a lot about this whole situation, and it really hurts that DeMarcus Cousins got traded to the Pelicans and not the Celtics. And the reason I say that is because the Celtics still have the assets to trump any move that the Heat make on all these guys that are on the trading block or are involved in trade rumors. And I don't know how true it is, but you've got Jimmy Butler and Paul George are the big names, right? It was those two and Cousins. Cousins got traded, so it's those two, Butler and George. And they're better than Cousins anyway. So those are the names. If the Heat want one of those guys, it's going to be tough to do that because the Celtics can just basically say, all right, we see the Heat's offer. We'll raise you the Brooklyn pick or two Brooklyn picks or whatever it might take. Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, these guys who are on in great contracts and are solid, if not good, you know, starting type players at their position, then, you know, the Celtics would basically just trump anything the Heat offer. So until the Celtics eventually make a move with those assets, I don't know how the Heat go about acquiring their star. You know what I mean? Like, free agency, maybe. You know, the lure of South Beach, maybe. But we've talked at length about how the CBA complicates that. And I'm not sure what players are going to even be on the free agent market. So as far as trades go, if you're Pat Riley, you need a top 15 player. And there's not a top 15 player on this roster right now. As much as much potential as Whiteside might have, and as good as Goran Dragic has been, neither of them are top 15 players. Butler and George are. And the general asking price for these big swing deals is a B to B plus level player who can immediately make an impact, a young prospect, and a first round pick. And the Heat can't trade their first round pick, their 2017 pick, until they actually select a player with the pick, and then they could trade the player that way. Which, of course, there's back channels and workings that way. So if Pat Riley is going to land his star, his whale, the guy that we've been waiting for since LeBron left, it's going to be not at this trade deadline, but it'll have to be at on the draft, the day of the draft. And it would probably include Whiteside or Dragic, Justice Winslow, and the pick. Or whoever they decide to choose with that pick. And those three players would be moved. And for that to happen, Miami probably has to tank this year. If they realistically want a top 15 player, if they want Butler or George, they probably have to tank this year and make sure that that pick ends up in the top five. Because then that becomes more of an equal playing field with the Brooklyn pick that Boston has. And that might be the only way the Heat have to go. So my question is it worth tanking this season? As much as we have talked about loving this 13-game win streak and making a playoff push, and Pat Riley talks about the karma of winning and how that trumps all or whatever, like, I'm starting to think, look, it might be worth trading James Johnson for a late first. It might be worth parting with Deion Waiters for now. All these guys are on expiring contracts anyway, so I don't know how many more years this chemistry of this team carries on for. Is it worth just tanking this thing, getting a pick in the top five, and then moving those three pieces to get Butler or George? Because at this point, that's the only way the Heat are going to become contenders again in the Eastern Conference, unless I'm wrong about that.
I don't think you're necessarily wrong about it. I think there's potentially other options for becoming a contender in the future that we just can't see. And then ultimately, look, who would you say is the second best team in the Eastern Conference right now?
Boston? Probably. Yeah.
Even maybe if Ibaka plays, if Ibaka comes out and shows up the way he did in Oklahoma City, you could say make a case for the Raptors. And I mean, I've seen this argument a lot, and I'd have to tend to agree. Do either of those teams as currently constructed, even with the addition of, say, Butler in Boston, are they good enough to beat LeBron James and the Cavaliers? Probably not, right?
But yeah, I mean, we can make a case for Boston trading. They have to make a move with one of these picks. They can't. They're starting to release all their rookies that they're drafting a year after they pick them. They only have 15 roster spots, but that's the case, right? Like, if you're Boston and Toronto's made their move, and you look at Cleveland, Kevin Love's getting injured. Kyrie Irving can get injured. LeBron James is playing 48 minutes a game. It's just. Trading for Butler, if you're Boston, that gets you a lot closer. And maybe you're a piece away. Your depth beats out Cleveland's.
You can get past them this year. Maybe, arguably, if Cleveland's at full strength next season, then you're screwed again.
Right.
And you might not be good enough. You might be, just a shade or two lower below,
And we've seen this in the past, right? Like one injury. All of a sudden, the second best team in the East ends up in the finals, and then who knows what can happen. Well, you lose to the Warriors.
Look at the Thunder. I mean, they were going to be one of the top teams in the Western Conference every year, and they always had one injury that kept them out, either Westbrook or Ibaka or Durant, et cetera. So
I don't – look, and this is my thing with Riley. I don't know that winning another championship is the number one priority for him. I'm sure he wants it. But I really think when it comes, like, push comes to shove, like, Riley just wants to win more than he loses. And that's been his MO for his whole career. Right. As long as he's winning more than he loses, he can at least justify it with the basketball karma gods or whatever. Like, he can justify it. Like, we're good. Like we were talking about on another podcast, the late 90s Heat. They never won a championship. They never made the finals. Like, they were just the Hawks. They were just good. They were winning more than they were losing every single year, and it was exciting and it was fine. I mean, last year, the team that with Dwayne Wade and Dang and Joe Johnson, and like, that was a fun team.
Third best team in the Eastern Conference.
And it didn't even make the Eastern Conference Finals, but we had a good time, right? Like, we feel good about that year. We felt the best about this season after a 13-game win streak, despite still being under 500. That was the most fun, and I think Riley gets that. I think Riley feels that and thrives on that. I think he just wants to win more than he loses. And I think you could build a team that wins more than it loses as currently constructed. I don't know what you'd have to pay Dion Waiters to come back and James Johnson and all this stuff. Right. But I also know that Riley loves to have superstars on his team. I don't know that Whiteside and Dragic are. I just don't know. I don't see another route to get Butler or George. And the underlying point is, the Heat, I think, for Riley to call this, whatever happens the next couple of years, a success, I think he has to get one of these guys. Boogie Cousins is gone, and maybe he was never even interested in him. But if you look at Jimmy Butler and Paul George, you've got to get one of those guys. Or, I mean, you and I were talking about guys before we started recording. What's going on in Portland with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum? I've been on the McCollum bandwagon and the Lillard bandwagon, really, since they were rookies. But it looks quite clear that both of them are, going to be top 15 players. And, Blake Griffin. I mean, is he still a top 15, top 20 player? Depends on how many injuries he has. I mean, we've talked about him before. I'm scared of his injuries. You're scared of his injuries. But it's a question worth asking. There's the Carmelo Anthony question, which we don't need to dive into. I mean, but really, if you think about, okay, who can be our franchise player? It's Jimmy Butler. It's Paul George. And whichever one that Portland, if and when, decides to ship off between Lillard and McCollum, those are the guys. And
you see Hayward? You see Hayward as being? No. Yeah, Gordon Hayward?
No, not top 15.
Not quite up there?
No, not.
He's still young enough, though, right? Yeah. Can he make that leap?
He's really good. I like Gordon Hayward, but he just doesn't have the athleticism. He just, like all these top 15 guys, they just have the athleticism to be, Gordon Hayward, he's good at a lot of things. I don't know if
he's put on so much muscle mass, though. I mean,
he's gotten quicker. He's really good. I think he's, top 30, top 25 even. I don't know that he's a franchise player. It's tough, but he's like Klay Thompson, right? He's got an inherent ceiling. And I don't want to say that ceiling is that he's white, but I'm not also, I don't know. I don't know what it is. But it's just like, you compare him to a guy like Jimmy Butler and Paul George, who could just jump out of the building and defend at such a high level. Butler is a better defender than Gordon Hayward's ever going to be. You know what I mean?
Hayward's a pretty good defender.
He's a pretty good defender, but Butler is disruptive. You know what I mean? He's that next level. He's elite, and I wouldn't put Hayward as elite.
We tend to discredit. I think there's actually a little case there. And I don't mean to call you out. I don't think you're guilty of this, but I think there's a undervaluing, underappreciation of what he does, and I think it does happen to be because he's white. You know, take it for what it's worth.
That's why I tried to hedge before. I'm not saying it's because he's white.
It's also Utah.
Klay Thompson comparison. He's white.
It's also Utah, and Utah, you know, is that team that was not particularly good. Then they showed promise, and then just missed the playoffs.
Would you compare Hayward to Chris Bosh? Chris Bosh is a top 20, 25 player. I just don't know that he could be the franchise. He can't be the franchise player. He was that in Toronto. I don't know that
he wasn't particularly good though. I mean, and he was good there.
Yeah,
but I don't think anybody appreciated what he did until he came in here and was a third best player. So I mean, it's possible.
So you think Hayward could be a difference maker? He could be a guy that puts a team without a superstar over the top.
I mean, he's looked so much better this year with the addition of George freaking Hill. I mean,
George Hill's good, man.
I know George Hill's good, but who's better, George Hill or Goran Dragic? I'd have to say Dragic.
He destroys Dragic on the defensive end, but he can shoot threes.
Fair. He's not going to get as many touches. He's not going to create as much on offense, right. I think, as Dragic does. I don't know. I see if you get a guy like Hayward alongside Dragic, they would pick up the pace much faster. I mean, runs.
So Whiteside, Dragic, and Hayward. What's that team's ceiling? We're talking about a team that's probably right
52
there.
52 wins in the Eastern Conference.
How many?
52 wins in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, not 60. They're not beating Cleveland. They're probably still not as good as Toronto.
I'll take it.
I think most Heat fans would. And that's the question.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so. Actually, I disagree with you on that one. I think we're 3 years, three years removed from title contention. And everybody's starting to bemoan the wheel of mediocrity that we're going to be spinning on. It's like, geez, I mean, we're not talking about Philadelphia that hasn't won a title since the early 80s, okay? This is a completely different situation there. You know, they went to the finals once with Allen Iverson. They had some decent teams in and out of the playoffs. That's not the same kind of level of mediocrity.
That's a good point, though, right? Like, I think you and I would take Hayward added to this team, and we would be very happy with it. Just contending, being a good team, maybe hitting a couple draft picks when we eventually get them back, and just churning the bottom half of that roster until something happens. I think you and I would be happy with that. But if that's the central question I'm asking. If Riley would be happy with that, then fine. And this is just assuming that Gordon Hayward is going to leave Utah. I don't know why he would. Utah seems primed to be a better team than Miami does. He, by all accounts, he likes Utah. So that's not even a guy we're talking about. But if you want to avoid that spinning wheel of a third, fourth seed in the East every year, then you've got to make a play for Butler or George. You've got to. And if that's the case, then you really need to start. And I think that's why this trade deadline or this summer is going to be so important for Miami, is because it really sets up for getting one of those guys. And if you don't get one of those guys, I don't know what Miami's route to eventually being a contender in the East is. I don't know, because it's not this team. Like, as good as Deion Waiters is, I don't know that this team... It's not this team. I mean, we're watching this team. This team is not... If this team is healthy and is as good as it was on that 13-game win streak, it's a 45-win team.
You know, thinking about this now, and I know we addressed it in our recent mailbag, but now I'm thinking about it, I'm a little surprised that Riley did not use his typical MO to pry Cousins out of Sacramento.
I know. I mean, it's...
I'm like thinking
about
it now.
Wait. We did talk about it, though. They didn't have what Sacramento was looking for.
Okay, they were looking for that first pick, I guess, maybe. If they wanted the pick.
They didn't have Buddy Hield either. I guess Vivek loved that he calls him the next Steph Curry. Like,
good point. I guess that's what it was.
The Kings, I think. Well, that goes back to the Whiteside thing, though. I do. Right. We talked about how like it looks like the market's dried up. The Kings are an anomaly. Like whatever they do, I'm not even sure could be like considered in the same realm of like what market value is. You know what I mean? Like they think Buddy Hield is like they think they landed a superstar for a superstar. Like that's what they think, and obviously that's not true. But that's what they think they did. So I don't like that would be like I don't know getting a superstar and a first round pick for that is going to be in the top 10 probably or could be a top 15 pick. Top 20, yeah. I guess, if you're New Orleans, right? Because you have Cousins. A top 20 pick and a superstar for DeMarcus Cousins seems like a fair return. But then when you say that the superstar is Buddy Hield, not so much. But I don't know. So basically what I'm getting to is this is if I was put in place, my plan would be tank this year. I don't care how you do it. You got to tank this year and end up back in the top 5. I don't want to part with James Johnson or Waiters, but if that's what it takes to tank, then do it. And then you end up with a top 5 pick, and at the draft day, you're calling Indiana and you're calling Chicago. And if you're calling Chicago, you offer Whiteside, Justice Winslow, and we'll pick whoever you want with our top 5 pick, and we'll trade that player to you for Jimmy Butler. And if it's Indiana, I have a feeling they would prefer Dragic over Whiteside because that's the team that wants to play fast. And Teague is a free agent after this year, so you say, we'll give you Dragic, Justice Winslow, and whoever you want with this top 5 pick, and after we pick, we'll ship all 3 of these guys to you for Paul George. And that's the offer. And unfortunately, that's the best Miami can do, but that's the offer. And you offer those things out, and you give it a shot. And if nobody takes it, then you have a top 5 pick, and you select somebody and hope that person becomes a superstar. And that's the road. That's the only road. I've been thinking a lot about this. That's the only road I see.
Okay.
That's it? I talked you into it? I don't know.
No, I disagree. I don't know if that's... I think you might be right about that being the only road. I just don't know if I want to go down that road, to be honest with you. I mean,
right.
I know that we're using the standard MO for Riley of acquiring a superstar. I can't stomach the idea of actively tanking again. I don't know. And maybe when it was... It's seemingly unintentional or a soft tank as it was, you know, 2 months ago or a month ago, maybe would have been more acceptable or palatable. But now having a taste for winning and seeing that this team has some potential and can play at a high level, I'm just not willing to accept that. Look, I mean, we didn't think this team was going to be that bad at the start of the season. Even without Chris Bosh, we still thought they'd be a mediocre to okay team.
We were thinking like 35-ish wins, right?
Yeah, 35 to 38, somewhere in that window seemed realistic. they were on pace to win maybe 20 games, right? Or just barely above 20 games. And they've already eclipsed that mark. So they've surpassed what their expectations were for the start of the season, or what they were, you know, as far as plotting their course out.
So you wouldn't be able to deal with another couple months of tanking if it meant if you knew that the Heat would end up with Butler or Paul George this summer, would you?
And surround him
like
with
doesn't what?
And surround him with what though? I mean,
well, now you can bring free agents into that. I mean, if you have Jimmy Butler and Paul George, then you probably have either Whiteside or Goran Dragic with him. Hopefully Goran Dragic. And you have those two. And then all of a sudden you can go out and recruit a Paul Millsap. And that's, you know, Paul Millsap might look at Miami like Al Horford looked at Boston and say, Atlanta's a sinking ship. I'm going to jump. I'm 32 years old. I've only got a few more years left to win a championship. I'm going to go to Miami, play with Jimmy Butler, Goran Dragic, Paul Millsap. And you still have guys like Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson. I mean, you could still re-sign Willie Reed. You could still re-sign James Johnson. I mean, that's what you rebuild with. But it all starts with your top 15 player. It all starts there. And if you don't have that, then you don't really have a shot at anything.
I guess you're right. It does make sense. I don't know. Maybe I've been...
I'm saying all of this objectively, like I'm totally in, but it would suck to tank for the rest of the year. I'm totally with you. But it's just like, I think about the road that it would take, and that's it. Like, that's the road. It's that, or you end up with the top five pick, and you end up with Lonzo Ball, and he becomes a superstar. You can use whatever rookie you want, but it's like, those are the only two things. I don't see any other... I don't see another way. I don't know.
No, I think you're right. It is hard, and maybe it just be my own personal fault that I can't see that long term, or I can't see that far into the future. And maybe I don't know. It's hard for me to accept it. And again, you know, the recent bout of winning has impacted my overall thought process. Because I think if you would have asked me in December when the team was really struggling, I said, yeah, I'm all aboard it. Let's get a top two pick. Let's get a number one pick even, see what happens. But
the team's not going to win 13 straight games all the time. Like, reality, at this second half of the year, what's going to happen is the team's going to win a couple of games and they're going to lose a couple of games in a row all the time. And it's just going to be kind of like, hey, the Heat are good again. Now they're not. And whatever. So it's going to be a roller coaster of the last, you know, couple months of the season.
And they'll go 500 for the rest of the year, basically.
Something like that, right? And they'll end up with a top 15 pick, and maybe they get lucky. Maybe they find Giannis. Maybe they find Kawhi. I don't know. That's the other option, right? You just kind of get lucky, and you have somebody that ends up being Finals MVP in their second season.
Ah, yeah.
Right. So, well, before we log on off, did anything happen while we were over here on the?
No, I don't notice anything. On Hoopsite?
Okay.
Still some names out there. Shabazz Muhammad, I think, being shopped around.
That's a difference maker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm joking.
Utah's expressed interest in reacquiring Deron Williams. Ooh.
All right. So nothing really is happening. So I guess we might as well just close the show on that. We'll be on standby for the rest of the trade deadline in case anything happens, but... Until then, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at Locked On Heat, or by email, where you can send us a mailbag question, or multiple, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. If you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.